Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Three Martini Lunch. Grab a stool next to Greg Corumbus of Radio America and Jim Garrity of National Review. Three Martini's coming up.
Hey, very glad you're with us for the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. We've got... Well, the first one's actually good, bad, and crazy all in and of itself, and then we're going to have another good one and another crazy one, which is also very, very bad. So martini number one, let's just classify it as that, is the launch of the much-anticipated 2024 presidential bid of Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. But there's three different aspects of this, so we're going to hit each of them briefly here. First of all, Jim, I guess for the DeSantis people especially, comes the bad. They had this innovative way of launching the campaign, never been done before. It was going to be a live appearance on Twitter Spaces, audio only, with DeSantis and Elon Musk, as well as David Sachs. There was only one problem. They, didn't anticipate the number of people who wanted to listen, which is in one way a good problem to have, but in the actual moment, not a good problem to have. Here is how glitchy it got early on.
Tonight, I'm pleased to introduce two individuals who've done more to loosen the grip.
Uh-oh, that's not good. He'll be
all
back.
Right. Sorry about that.
Okay.
We've got so many people here that I think we are kind of melting the servers, which is a good sign.
Let's see. So, are we on? Yeah, I think so.
Just to simplify.
And then they're gone again. So, it took about, 15 minutes or more to finally get everything sorted out. And once it finally did proceed without all those technical problems, the DeSantis message, which is well-honed at this point, was strong again, and he made it official that he is going to be running for president, as we all knew.
Well, I am running for president of the United States to lead our great American comeback. Look, we know our country's going in the wrong direction. We see it with our eyes. And we feel it in our bones. Our southern borders collapse. Drugs are pouring into the country. Our cities are being hollowed out by spiking crime. The federal government's making it harder for the average family to make ends meet and to attain and maintain a middle-class lifestyle. And our president, well, he lacks vigor, flounders in the face of our nation's challenges, and he takes his cues from the woke mob. I don't think it has to be this way. American decline is not inevitable. It is a choice. And we should choose a new direction, a path that will lead to American revitalization. We must restore sanity to our nation. This means embracing fiscal and economic sanity. Stop pricing hardworking Americans out of a good standard of living through inflationary borrow, print, and spending policy.
So, Jim, even when it got going, it was audio only, and you kind of missed the visuals that normally go along with a major event like this. But DeSantis, as we've been saying ever since he's been governor, very, very strong on the issues. And as we've documented over the past 4+ years, a very strong record in Florida. Now, if you're going to launch on Twitter and things don't go right, you're going to get the memes of Twitter and the blowback of Twitter. So in the end, the problems, are they a one-day or two-day story, or are they going to be part of the narrative now?
I think 1 or 2 day story. And a week from now or 2 weeks from now, if people are still talking about when the topic of Ron DeSantis comes up, if people are still talking about Elon Musk and Twitter Spaces 2 weeks from now, that's a bad sign, because it means DeSantis will have not done anything in the next 2 weeks that people want to talk about and that they think is more interesting and that they think is a bigger deal and more consequential than the fact that the tech didn't work for, 20 minutes or so. So I know this is going to shock your listeners, but I was actually on the elliptical, at the gym yesterday around 6 p.m. Had my earphones in, went on Twitter, tried to, I could never connect in for more than a few seconds. It kept spitting me out. Maybe your experience was different, but I suspect when they're bragging about 600,000 people wanting to all be in the same Twitter space at the same time and melting the servers, maybe the number was even higher of people who just couldn't get in because the system kept spitting them out. So the first part, that's bad. That, you know, it's not fatal. It's not a career ender. It's not a campaign ender. But it's bad. You only get that first chance to make a first impression. DeSantis and his campaign tried something new and different, and it did not work. So that's bad. So, you know, the idea, oh, this mostly reflects the level of interest in it. Okay, yeah, but, you know, he's running second in the polls. And since at least the beginning of the pandemic, if not earlier, Ron DeSantis has been one of the governors who gets national coverage and who was getting covered and treated like he was a presidential candidate long before the formal announcement. So, yeah, of course, there are a lot of people who are interested in him. I think right now he looks like the only candidate who has a serious shot of dislodging Trump as the nominee. Now, could Nikki Haley or Tim Scott or somebody else, you know, turn it around and surprise us? Yeah, they could. But it's really tough when you're starting at, you know, 5% or less, which is what most of the other candidates are right now. So, you know, of course, people are going to be interested. The real big question is, hey, Elon, what happened? You know, why? If you want Twitter Spaces to be the next big spot to make news or something, why were you not prepared for that level of interest? Did you not think people would be interested? So that aspect was, you know, frustrating. And the fact that it flopped so quickly seemed, you know, I guess I'd say was the crazy aspect of this. And I'm sure that a lot of people, there might be some people on the DeSantis campaign saying, eh, you know, we should have skipped this. We should have, you know, we should have gone with the Florida rally. We should have gone with something else. That having been said, you know, 15 million people have watched his video on Twitter so far, or at least it's been watched 15 million times. I shouldn't say it was 15 million people. The interview with Trey Gowdy on Fox News ran fine. The interview with Mark Levin on the radio went fine. He's going to do an interview with Eric Erickson and Dana Loesch today. A week from now, everybody who wants to see and hear Ron DeSantis will be able to see and hear Ron DeSantis. And they're going to shape their opinion of him based on what the Florida governor says and does. Not about, ah, could you believe Twitter Spaces didn't work the way it was supposed to? So I kind of feel like this is a, you know, tempest in a teapot or the sort of thing that's not going to be consequential. I guess I suppose if in the next couple of days, weeks, months that there are similar big embarrassing screw-ups on the part of the DeSantis campaign, it could create a narrative of up that hapless Ron DeSantis, things are always going wrong. You know, obviously the Trump campaign will be, you know, doing its best to spotlight all this kind of stuff. It could turn into a narrative, but I think it's going to take more than this, other than the people who want to see it that way. And finally, I don't think anybody changed their mind last night. I think if you were a fan of Ron DeSantis, you remain a fan of Ron DeSantis, and nothing that happened last night changed your mind. If you were a critic of Ron DeSantis, obviously nothing that happened last night makes you feel better about him. I will say there are smart people that I respect who were texting me almost immediately saying, does this sink him? Which surprised me. I don't see it that way. It is conceivable that I'm totally wrong and that the, you know, DeSantis campaign flops out of the gate. I think it's probably, you know, if there was any chance he was going to get a big jump out of his announcement, I don't think that's likely. But, I, you know, there are some people who, I don't want to say are panicking, but who were like, man, this is, you know, an absolute flop of a debut and that's going to be the story. And, you know, really believe he's in trouble this early, which is not something I can quite see right now.
Well, Jim, I have great respect for Eric Erickson, but as a loyal Radio America Network employee, I encourage everyone to listen to the Dana Loesch interview of Governor DeSantis. And yeah, I mean, he's basically been punched by Trump verbally, you know, ever since even before the midterm elections. Trump was rolling out De Sanctimonious from even before Election Day. And since DeSantis was not an official candidate, there really wasn't a lot of counterpunching, and even though both are pretty well-known commodities, when you can't fight back or decide not to fight back for 6 months, it kind of defines that candidate in the minds of a lot of people who are naturally fond of President Trump. We'll see what happens as time goes on. There's legal issues. I think DeSantis will be a very effective debater, but he's been bruised a little bit over the past couple of months, and we'll see how well he can fight back here. Real quick, crazy element to this first martini. Jim, and we've talked about it. We talked about it last week with the Casey DeSantis hit piece in Politico and a lot of other things. All the people that either used to be Republicans or at least used to pretend to be Republicans or conservatives, they keep talking about how Trump is this existential threat to democracy and the Republic may not survive if he's ever back in the White House. And we have to marshal the American people to make sure this plague never visits us again. But all the venom is aimed at Ron DeSantis. So this is perhaps exposing the real motivation for some of these people. If Trump is off the stage, they've got a big problem, mostly financially, but otherwise as well.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I'm kind of, you know, I try not to let it bother me. I try not to grind my teeth too much about it because I believe these people, they've cast their lot. They have made very clear who they are and what they stand for. I do think if you see Donald Trump as a threat and a menace to the Constitution, I think it means more and it will be more significant if Donald Trump loses in a Republican primary than if he loses the general election again. If he loses in the Republican primary, then in some sense, it was Trump's own people or his own party that have rejected him and said, it is time to move on. We want to go in a new direction, and we like this new guy. Presumably DeSantis, but, conceivably somebody else. If Trump loses the general election against Biden, it's basically just a rerun of 2020. And I think the scenario that does keep me up awake at night is that if it's close and whether there's some sort, if Trump believes that he's been cheated again, is there something akin to January 6th on a larger scale? Does he claim that the election was stolen? Does he claim that it was rigged? Does he basically feel like he's got nothing to lose anymore? And what happens there? So I'd like to avoid that scenario. So I'd like to see someone not named Donald Trump be the Republican nominee in 2024. We'll see how things shake out from here. But that's, if you really believe that Donald Trump is this existential threat to you and everything you care about, you think you'd be a slightly bit more enthusiastic about this, the Republican who currently has the best shot of overtaking him.
Perhaps you're not the, bulwark against extremism that just shows you how much they don't even believe their own talking points. What a bunch of frauds. All right, let's talk about Four Patriots. That's also good news today. FourPatriots.com/martini is where you want to go. Fantastic deals on so many things. You can get your last chance at deals on the Patriot Pure line of items, including the UV phone sanitizer, the UV wand, the sanitation solution machine, and the disinfecting power bank. But right now, their deluxe 3-month survival food kits are back in stock after being sold out for more than a year. These 3-month kits have 688 total servings per kit, which is about 8 per day, also about 1,500 calories per day. And better recipes than ever. Pancakes, mac and cheese, chili, potato soup, spaghetti, lasagna, and more. 100% satisfaction guaranteed. You can stash food away and be confident that whenever a disaster strikes, you and your family will be ready. Go to fourpatriots.com/martini to get the deluxe 3-month survival food kit and the peace of mind you deserve. Plus, get free shipping on orders over $97. That's the number 4patriots.com/martini. That's 4patriots.com/martini. All right, Jim, on to our second martini, a good martini. This one comes to us from Aaron Blake of the Washington Post, but he's really referencing a Fox News poll. And as we kind of suspected, given the way that things were unfolding here with the debt ceiling debate, Americans are not looking at this version of a fiscal deadline as they normally do when it comes to government shutdowns and debt ceiling deadlines and that sort of thing. According to the poll, 47% of Americans would blame President Biden if there's a default. 44% would blame the GOP. Now, in contrast, Blake points out that in the summer of 2011, this was when they had the big showdown with Boehner and Obama, and they eventually had all these spending caps that people pretty quickly ignored. But if there had been a default, who do you blame? President Obama, 32%, congressional Republicans, 47%, and even breaks it down with the 2013 government shutdown as well, with Republicans taking most of the blame. In some cases, between 2011 and 2013, Republicans taking the blame by a margin of more than 20%. And now it's Biden taking the heat more than Republicans. So, Jim, it seems like inflation is a big part of this, and they understand that a lot of that happened when Republicans controlled absolutely nothing. And so having a little more fiscal discipline seems pretty reasonable because they want their prices to go down.
So I am glad that Aaron Blake is calling attention to this. And I feel like this is the sort of thing that should be on Jeff Zients, top sheet of paper on his desk if he still uses paper, top item on his screen if he's using, laptop, phone, computer, tablet, something like that. That they should recognize that there is no way in which they can finesse this or work the refs, as I talked about yesterday, and say, oh, you know, this is really all Republicans' fault. There is no way that if there is a default on the debt and the subsequent economic consequences, that Biden does not escape at minimum half the blame. I think in all likelihood, the president always gets disproportionate amount of credit or blame for the state of the economy. And I think in the, you know, context of, ironically, what DeSantis was saying earlier in this podcast, the circumstances at the border, the bout of runaway inflation that we just endured, the debacle of the withdrawal from Afghanistan. This is a president who's got some really high profile failures on his mark already 2.5 years into his presidency. And he's going to run for re-election. And he wants to run for re-election was likely to be a recession, maybe a severe recession, because of the default and the debt. Are you kidding me? You know, this is baffling. So, I mean, again, maybe this is an 80-year-old man who just doesn't know what's going on around him anymore. Maybe this is a, you know, further indication that, you know, we're going to get right up to the deadline for the debt ceiling. And then Biden's going to look at whatever deal is on the table from House Republicans and say, okay, fine, I'll sign it. And maybe he does. Maybe that's how this is going to shake out. Not counting on it, but I think it's certainly a possibility. More likely, he'll put some counter proposal and he'll hope for that. I suppose there's a chance he thinks that at the last minute, Kevin McCarthy is going to offer him a clean debt increase, which I would not bet a lot of money on that. That does not start. You know, this is a game of chicken. And, you know, the whole point of chicken is you don't want to crash. You want to fool the other guy into thinking you don't care if you crash, but you actually have to care whether you crash or not. So it's just utterly bizarre positioning and comments from the White House so far. Look, maybe this is all kabuki theater. Maybe this is going to play out the way it always does. And maybe there'll be a last minute deal. But if you're looking for them, you can see signs that there isn't a last minute deal that is formulating on schedule. And if that's the case, we could be in for some real rough seas for the near future in this country.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are going to take a lot of blame if it actually comes to that. But I think it's helpful for the White House to know that they're not going to get the benefit of the doubt, as the Democrats have so often gotten for whatever reason in so many of these showdowns. So hopefully that leads to a more conciliatory attitude on their part as well.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.
All right, Jim, on to our final martini now. This is bad and crazy. You never want to see the IRS knocking on your door. But it's especially odd when they're knocking on your door the day that you're testifying against government intrusion into free speech before Congress, which is exactly what Matt Taibbi was doing on March 9th of this year, talking about how the government was influencing Twitter under the old Twitter regime to muzzle or muffle speech on a number of different topics, from Hunter Biden's laptop to COVID vaccine opinions and all sorts of other things. And so as it got closer and closer to the election, the influence of the government on people's ability to express their opinions on Twitter is pretty well documented, given all the emails that went back and forth here. And Taibbi, of course, has been part of the Twitter files and explaining how a lot of this worked. And now Jim Jordan, the chairman of the committee that was looking into the weaponization of government, requested and received information from the IRS about this amazing coincidence of the IRS showing it up at Taibbi's house on the same day he testified. Well, according to the IRS, Jim, Taibbi's visit from the IRS was connected to the fact that he allegedly did not respond to letters sent to him in 2019 and 2020. Now, both Taibbi and his accountant say they never got those letters. But even if they did, the IRS never followed up on them for 3 years and then just happened to show up on that very day. But even beyond that, the Taibbi 2018 tax return was the subject of the IRS opening a new investigation on Saturday, December 24th, 2022, which was just weeks after he started writing the Twitter files. So, Jim, as I joked with you in the lead up to today's podcast, the only people who work on Christmas Eve are Santa, the Nakatomi Corporation, and Hans Gruber. So the fact that the IRS was doing all sorts of this kind of stuff just in the shadow of the Twitter files coming out seems impossible to be a coincidence.
You know, listeners, if you just heard that, chuckled and thought, I bet they selected this topic just so they could make the diehard joke. You're half right. Yeah, that was that is an excellent reference. It is an excellent joke. And it is, you know, an exhibition of the inherent suspiciousness, perhaps even absurdity, of the IRS's sudden interest in Taibbi after he had, you know, become much more of a thorn in the government side. I'm going to step back and observe. First of all, let me observe to anyone from the Internal Revenue Service who is listening. Greg and I do our very darndest to make sure we pay every penny that we owe in our taxes, and nothing we say in this segment should be construed as justification for an audit or further investigation to us. With that said, and we should point out, people who are critical of the government and people who write nasty things about the administration, whatever that administration is, are capable of committing tax fraud. If you criticize the IRS, that should not be an automatically mean every audit of you is inherently illegitimate or not, you know, that there's not necessarily any crime there. However, just as John Durham had talked about the enormous damage that can be done to someone's reputation by just investigating them, never mind whether you ever actually indict them, the very act of being audited is an enormous amount of stress and headaches for the person being audited. And at the end, you have to effectively prove that you did nothing wrong instead of the usual process under criminal justice where you are innocent until proven guilty. My friend Jonah Goldberg has been audited twice. And back in 2022, he put just a short couple series of tweets about the experience that I think are illuminating. He says, what most infuriates him is this argument or this perception that, well, if you did nothing wrong, it's no big deal. He says that when he was audited the first time, it was legit because he had screwed up in not reporting a small amount of money because he'd lost the 1099 for a speaking gig. Now, you shouldn't do that, but I think most of us would say, you know, you had $500 you were paid for. I don't know how much the amount was for Jonah. I can't imagine that it's this you know, huge sum. But if you have like $500 in or $1,000 or $2,000 or whatever it is in income and you don't report it, you don't pay taxes on it, that's bad. And you should go, you know, you should make sure you pay what you owe. But he points out that the process was an enormous pain in the butt and he doesn't use those words. The second time, Jonah says he did nothing wrong. But once you get audited, you're flagged for more audits. He came out fine in terms of penalties, but he says the hassle factor, the stress and frustration was considerable. And he asks, I'd like to say to all these people who say, look, unless you're a criminal, you have no reason to worry about getting audited or any of these 80,000 new employees of the IRS coming after you. What do you think of stop and frisk laws? What do you think of no-knock warrants? It makes the contention that actually, given a choice between unfairly frisked or unfairly audited, which would you rather have? Well, if you've been to the airports and had the TSA do the touchy-pokey with you, you know it's unpleasant, but it gets done in a couple of minutes, and then you go on with your life and go on with your flight. Audits go on for a considerable amount of time and a lot of stress, a lot of headaches. You got to dig up all your tax receipts. You may want to talk to your accountant if you used an accountant. Conceivably, you might want to talk with a lawyer. I don't know. He says, yes, Jonah concludes, the IRS needs to be able to audit people, but you should not pretend that one of the biggest invasions of privacy imaginable by the federal government is cost-free or fine or fun if you've done nothing wrong, particularly if you haven't been audited yourself. I think it's an exceptionally strong argument. And I think what we see here in Matt Taibbi is an example of the IRS acts guilty. Not 100% sure it's guilty, but the fact that they are meeting on Christmas Eve to audit a critic of the administration looks about as guilty as humanly possible. And that is one of those things why people distrust the government. In some cases, they hate the government. And if the government would stop doing stupid things like this, there would be a lot less government anti-government attitudes out there. Earn our trust, American government. And oh, by the way, maybe one of the ways the Biden administration could do this is to give up the funding for the 80,000 new IRS agents that they initially told us were only going to be going after millionaires and billionaires. And the big banks, as Bernie Sanders would put it. But instead, no, we've got them going after, you know, ordinary middle class folks and going back and checking to make sure you have that receipt for that, you know, sandwich you had on that business trip back in 1984.
Well, it's been about a decade now since the IRS was hassling conservative organizations applying for nonprofit status. So I guess they're due again to go after high-profile critics of Democratic administration. But, Jim, to your point, this whole idea, and it reminds me again, yeah, of the airport scanners back in the day. And I specifically remember Lindsey Graham saying, well, if you got nothing to hide, you should have no problem with this. Well, yeah, I do, because this is a ridiculous
yes.
intrusion of my privacy. The government could justify anything doing that.
I was going to say, you know, not just the government, like, you know what? I'm going to stop and frisk random people who I think may or may not have weapons. Just because like, if you've got nothing to hide, what's your objection? Right.
You
know? The person who I would refer to on the matter of the TSA and their wandering hands is the exceptional musical satire parodist Remy, who makes those videos for a reason. And I've noticed TSA agents pop up in not every single one of his music videos, but a whole lot of them. My suspicion is that Remy has been poked, probed, prodded, squeezed, groped every conceivable way by the TSA agent. And this is how Remy deals. I don't know this. I just have a feeling. Is it his particular recurring theme in how much TSA agents particularly enjoy giving you, you know, the once over and, you know, checking every conceivable place? Greg, I don't know about you, but at minimum, I feel like if that's going to happen, you should be buying me dinner first.
Jim, on that note, we will exit for today. See you tomorrow. It'll be actually Friday.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity, National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks so much for being with us today. And please subscribe to the podcast if you don't already. Thanks also for your 5-star ratings and your kind reviews. Please keep those coming. Also, get us on your home devices. All you have to say is play 3 Martini Lunch podcast. Follow us on Twitter. He's at Jim Garrity. I'm at Dateline_DC. Have a terrific Thursday and join us again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.
Hey, this is Todd Herman, host of The Todd Herman Show. You might have heard me on Rush Limbaugh's show or as a regular fill-in for about 8 years. I now do a show out of the high mountains of free America because, you know, I got exiled from Seattle. Why the need to remake country music and into what? From there, I looked at art. Art under the guise of totalitarian regimes is so interesting because it seems that Beyonce is doing exactly what totalitarian regimes want done with art. Check out The Todd Herman Show every day on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
Someone go tell Kermit it's definitely easy being green. While the left blames corporate America, not only are green companies not paying taxes, they're getting $1.8 trillion of your taxpayer money. Why did we pass the Inflation Reduction Act again?
Check out the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts.